Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name
Hello, Michael.
Oh, hello. Chris.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's
great.
Good to
I'm excited to have Chris from North Carolina here for Good News Updates from Living Compassion. How are you today?
Excellent.
Great. Great. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your practice in the world. I know that you're a longtime practitioner.
This is true.
With a family and a job, and I was wondering if you could share with us what that's like for you.
Exactly. Family and a job and a house and yards and gardens and cars and friends and relationships and kind of the whole schmear of stuff. So,
yeah.
And one of the probably, just in terms of assistance with my awareness practice, probably the biggest thing has been not long after I started coming regularly to retreats, and as you say, it has been a long time. I hesitate to even look back. I think it was something like 1986 when I went to my first retreat. At some point, again, after I started coming regularly on retreats, then Sherry encouraged me to start a group here in Asheville. And I took her up on that and did just that. And that has been a really key cornerstone to, assisting me to, move along with my practice, to become more aware. Just having that that consistency from week to week, having something that's there on the schedule that's not up to me to determine whether I'm going to show up or not, that's just been really fabulous. And a couple of aspects of that. So one is just, having a group to go to like that, having that on the schedule. And then, being the person who kind of is setting it up has, and then facilitating too, has just opens up, whole other ranges of possibilities in terms of awareness practice and having to show up. And it's been absolutely fabulous. And conditioning would have a few other things to say about it. But over the years, in looking back, it's just been an instrumental thing for me. At this point, we've got anywhere from, your usual Tuesday night, which is this evening, actually, as we speak, they're sitting downstairs while I have snuck upstairs and I'm using this phone. excuse me. So during the week, sometimes I'll get awareness practice calls. So my number's listed in the local paper to call. Maybe, Wednesday at 2:00, and I'm at my desk and working away, and somebody will call, and they'll want to know a question about our group, and so there it is. Another opportunity to kind of check in with myself, and see what's going on. And to be present.
Yes. So you said your first retreat was many years ago, back in 1986.
Yeah.
And as you went on retreat regularly, Sherry encouraged you to start a sitting group of your own.
Exactly.
And as you said, that's really been a cornerstone for you of your practice over the years. Sounds like in large measure because it requires you to show up every week.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Just having those places where, again, it's just not up to me whether I'm going to show up or not. And more than that, it's, being the person that's in front of the room, and other people do that too here in Asheville and other places around the country, being that person that shows up in the front of the room, it's just one of those places where I'm required to show up. It's no fun to be kind of there and identified. It's no fun when I'm by myself, and it certainly isn't any more fun when there's more people there. So, yeah.
Uh-huh. So being called to show up as a facilitator, sitting there at the front of the room, really calls you to being present.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And so being identified is no fun on your own, and it sounds like certainly no fun in front of the group also.
Exactly. Yep.
Yes, I have a similar experience as well, being involved in practice and making commitments that, as you say, are on the calendar and there's not a choice about me going or not, really requires me to show up.
Yep. And so a lot of a lot of my practice is trying to set up my life in that way so that essentially a lot of those practice reminders come from somewhere else other than me.
Uh-huh.
Again, there's that phone call in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
That somebody has a question, and so, you know, there's a little wake-up call. And, you know, just as many places as I can think of to do that, it's helpful.
Yes. And over the years, since 1986, what have you seen change in your practice?
Yeah. One of the things that I look at in that is over the years, there's this kind of some practices that I've taken on that I call growing my practice.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that started with an awareness of kind of how conditioning puts things on my schedule, you know, so that it tries to keep me just slightly or way over schedule, something like that, you know. So I maybe am scheduled, you know, for 25 hours in a day, and there's only 24.
Uh-huh.
So in kind of coming to that awareness of kind of some of that process about how that goes on and saying no to some of the small things to try and get it down so that there's like maybe I'm only 95% scheduled. And what I find is in that, you know, that 5% or that kind of that increased spaciousness in the schedule in the day, that, you know, my heart generally just turns towards the silence, turns towards you know, looking for itself in some way or, you know, wanting to practice.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's fascinating. So turning it to conditioning, you would be scheduled 25 hours a day.
At least.
At least. And I project stressed and overwhelmed and all that.
Yeah, that does seem to come along with it, doesn't it?
Right. And what you've noticed over time is that as you pay attention to that, as to how those smaller items are scheduled, that you can sort of schedule maybe 95% of the day. And when you do have that free time, there is a tendency to turn toward that silence, to turn toward practice.
Yeah, yeah, that practice just becomes much easier in that place. And then, you know, once I begin to kind of, for me, when I would begin to get the hang of that, then I can take other days where, say, a Sunday, and I can shoot for, you know, 50% scheduled,
uh-huh.
Something like that. And then, you know, so it's really spacious. And then just kind of watch as, you know, the part of me that wants to practice starts to fill in some of those empty spots.
Wow. Wow.
Kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds really exciting the way you're talking about it. To me, what I project onto that is a real commitment to show up for yourself.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot of it, too. Yeah, it's, I know, and Sherry's talked about this, what it feels like growing up, taking responsibility for myself and then,
uh-huh.
You know, extending that to, you know, others that I know and the environment and, you know, just in all kinds of places. And then with that, it's never felt like a sacrifice to me. It's always felt like as I let go of, you know, more and more of what conditioning wants me to do, that I'm actually, you know, feeling more and more fulfilled rather than, you know, as conditioning would have me believe that it's less of what's important in life. It feels more like it's more and more of what's important in life.
Wow. Wow. That's inspiring. Chris, I'm going to take some of your tips with me as I move forward.
Okay, great. Perfect. All right. Thanks, Michael.
Great. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet. My pleasure.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Tonight, I'm excited to announce that we have Dave McKay with us. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. Yourself?
I'm great. Dave, you're a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
That is a true statement.
That is a true statement. I have to ask you, is it warm up there today?
It's hot, but we've got a beautiful breeze blowing.
Oh, great.
Kind of blowing everything off. Yeah.
Great.
It's wonderful. Actually kind of funny to think about myself being a monk at a Zen monastery. You know, hearing Chris talk, I don't know, I just really admired what you guys were talking about because, you know, people often, when they come to the, you know, get involved with practice and do a retreat or something like that and start to get a sense of the enormity of this thing that we're up against,
yes.
We talk about is conditioned mind, you know, often where people go is, oh, my gosh, you know, you've got to be, do you have to be a monk? to be able to really do this work? And of course, the answer is no. And it's just, it's neat to have such a good model in what you guys were just talking about of someone who's made the choice to do practice in the world and has really made a terrific go at it. And you know, and just to see practice being successful in any context, which of course it is and can be, and it doesn't have to just happen at a monastery way off in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, it's inspiring to me to hear Chris and to hear you and all the other monks. To me, what I get out of that is that sense of sangha and really being inspired and re-inspired by role models in almost every direction I look.
Yeah, that's true. And I know for myself, I think this is probably what I was most responding to and what you guys were saying, is I can't remember how you called it exactly, but I think it was something like, you know, the commitment to show up for yourself.
Yes.
Because I heard that as a theme all the way through that whole conversation that, you know, to be at the monastery, and this is one of the advantages of being at a monastery, in a way that's done for you, at least
yes.
on the outside. You know, on the inside, that's a big piece of work to find that commitment to show up moment after moment after moment, you know, day after day in the silence of the monastery. You know, out in the world, somebody like Chris or, you know, all the people, all the thousands of people who are involved in this practice and practicing in the world, you know, they all have to do it for themselves. You know, they have to find a way and find a willingness to make that choice, you know, day after day that, you know, this is what I really want for myself most. I want to be present. You know, I want to end the suffering that's happening in this person, and so I need to set up structures, like you guys were talking about, to assist me with that.
Yes. Yes, that's my experience as well. Dave, we have at least three callers lined up here. Great. Let me get the first one on the air. First caller, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hello?
Hi there.
Hi. My name is Joe, and I'm calling from Clark Summit, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Joe. Welcome.
Hi.
What's going on this evening?
I'm calling because I was recently at a retreat in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
And during the retreat in Pittsburgh, I left early. I left early on Saturday, and I'm calling in some regards seeking some sense of atonement.
So I take it from what you're saying, you weren't scheduled to leave early. It was kind of a decision that happened right there at the retreat.
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh.
And any sort of excuses that I would make sort of fit into... It's kind of a long story, but it seems that I really wasn't mentally prepared to attend the retreat.
Uh-huh.
And as I was at the retreat, how can I put it? When I went to California at one of the retreats there, I had done a lot of hard and difficult work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to Pittsburgh, I did not know what to expect. And when I got there, I think something else took over. And even though I had been meditating almost every day for the past 2 years, I rejected the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing, I mean, I don't know if it's funny at all, but from one thing to another, I had broken rules when I was at the retreat. I had abused the message board. I personally believe I was insulting to at least one or two of the monks. It was a nightmare.
It was ugly. It
definitely was. And I left, and for a moment I was fine. And for the last 2 weeks, I have been a bit of a mess.
I bet. I bet. Well, a couple things. You know, one, just in case there's any consolation to you, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
It really does. You know, like I was sort of alluding to a minute ago, you know, this thing that we call conditioned mind, it's big. Mm-hmm. It's big, and it's really not interested in being seen, you know, in being examined. It's not interested in someone who wants to go beyond
mm-hmm.
conditioned mind.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's gonna pull out the big stuff when somebody, you know, does something audacious like goes to a retreat. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, sometimes, you know, we're, like you say, we're prepared for it. Sometimes we're really not, and we go under. And that's just kind of what happens.
Yeah, it seems it seems as if I was almost, I was very aware of the two people or three people that was there. When I was on, I hadn't used the some of the, I mean, I had not used a lot of the language, even though I've been using the daily recollection, and then I began to sort of all came swimming back.
Mm-hmm.
It all came swimming back, and over these past couple of weeks, I've almost been afraid to listen to some tapes that I've made, or and I've gotten very angry. Almost, I felt as if there was a shift, and I haven't known exactly what to do about it. But what I did, and I'll tell you what I decided to do about it.
Okay.
I decided to sort of put myself on a routine, and every morning, in hoping to atone, because I really felt as if the words that I said were very, very strong. And it wasn't me so much. And I'm trying to meditate since the retreat. I've gotten home and every day I've been meditating 6:30 in the morning for a half hour.
Uh-huh.
With the daily recollection. And I've really been trying to. I hope that I didn't unleash some bad karma, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I think I can set your mind at rest there. That there's very little you can do in a circumstance like that that really does any permanent damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all set up to sort of absorb things like that, you know, absorb conditioning in the way that it acts out. Now, the thing that I hear in what you're saying, which seems helpful to me, is that I think what you're saying is you're using this to see how you cause yourself to suffer.
Well, I'm trying to see the suffering part. Now, again, I guess the thing is that maybe some of the ways that I acted prior to the retreat came out while I was there, and I was not aware of them.
Yeah, well, probably what happened was, you know, conditioning has been setting you up for a long time to suffer in a way that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And you know, without going into a structured environment like that, it's really hard to catch on to that. You know, because conditioning it really goes back to what Chris was talking about a little while ago, and kind of, you know, practicing the world. Conditioning has an amazing way of manipulating us kind of behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. In a way that, you know, we really have no idea that it's happening, and yet it's having a profound effect on our lives. And we can go along like that for a really long time without realizing that's happening. Mm-hmm. And without putting ourselves in some kind of an environment that reflects conditioning, like the retreat does, or, you know, like the things kind of that Chris was talking about earlier, like, you know, going to a sitting group or, you know, even listening to the radio show. Those sorts of things all are designed to reflect conditioning. Without something like that, we can go along forever without realizing that conditioning is having its way with us, kind of behind the scenes. But when we come to an environment like that, suddenly it becomes really obvious. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then what happens is, can we find the willingness to deal with that? And it sounds like you had a hard time, but during the retreat, but you're attempting now to kind of pick up the pieces and see if you can, you know, see if you can see what was going on and see if you can sort of get your practice back on its feet so you can be prepared the next time.
Yeah, well, my practice is almost, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe you can help me with this. It's almost as if I feel maybe the weight, you know, I got leaving the retreat early, you know, self-hate sort of came and kicked me in the ass.
Yeah, I bet it did. Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the, don't forget where you're going, but, you know, that's the whole point. You know, why is it going to try to make you leave an experience like that so that it can beat you up afterwards? You know,
and it's been doing it. And I guess I'm with getting the routine down and getting back to practicing, maybe I wasn't aware of, I mean, even though it seemed as if I was maybe unaware before the retreat, now what it is I'm aware of is really challenging me again.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and I hope that you can look at this as a good thing.
I'm trying.
Yeah. Now, that's going to be hard. It's going to be a hard place to get to from within side self-hatred, you know, because what self-hatred wants you to not profit by this at all and just get beat up and just never do practice again. But it sounds like that's not the choice you're making.
No, I'm up every day. I mean, it's a whole. I'm up at 6 every morning and in my meditation hall by 6:30.
Yeah. So if you can drop the self-hatred, I think what you'll see is this has been a really good thing for you. Now,
yeah.
according to the standards that conditioning has, you know, it's pulling out all the things you said, all the things you did, you know, kind of parading them before your eyes, beating you up over them. But none of that actually has anything to do with anything. You know, in this is one of the things I enjoy most about practice is that, you know, there truly are no standards or expectations about it. There's no right way to do it. And that if we're practicing awareness, we can truly use everything that happens to see how we cause ourselves to suffer. You know, no matter how hideous it might be, everything can enlighten us. And so, you know, it's true. It's hard to live with some of the things we do as we go along, as we're trying to attempt to end suffering. But hey, you know, a lot of times it takes that kick in the pants, as you're saying, to wake us up so that we realize where we are and so we can get back on track again.
Yeah. And that's, I think the place where I'll wind up will be a more committed self.
Yeah, it's very likely. Now, I want to warn you about something, which is that it's very likely going to happen again, because that's just the way it does. You know, it sounds like you've had a wake-up call, basically.
I had a wake-up call, but it seems that when I'm not practicing, or I should be practicing all the time, I have a shorter fuse, or now I'll turn and beat up myself a little faster, or I'm aware of it, but I don't know how to put it.
Yeah, you're more aware of it. That's very likely what's going on.
Yeah.
So just to prepare you, what will likely happen now? So you're in a place where you've kind of seen where you've been. You've seen you don't want to make the choice that you were making, even though you weren't really aware you were making that choice. But what you want to choose is practice. You've been getting up early to make it happen, you know, to sit and do the practice.
Yeah.
Now, conditioning still, even though you've seen it, you've seen what it did to you to some extent, it still is going to have that ability to do that to you again. This is what we're all, but this that's why they call it practice. You know, this is what we're all struggling with. And so what I would suggest to you, if you're willing for it, is to do everything you can to put yourself again in a structure that reflects conditioning, because that's how you'll see it operating behind the scenes again.
So explain that a little bit more. So I should put myself into a situation, a structure that would reflect my conditioning, meaning a retreat or what?
Anything you can find, really. You know, if there's a sitting group in your area, to go to the sitting group. You know, the practice that originates here at the monastery has lots of things to offer.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, so there's lots of ways to participate, and you know, nothing compares to, you know, putting oneself in the privileged environment again.
Yeah, I know, but right now I think that it will be important if I'm able to put myself on this routine and begin to, you know, like, again, the sense of atonement with how it is that I responded to the environment.
Yeah. Well, in that atonement, I think what you're talking about is finding compassion for yourself in that.
Yeah, and also for the others to know that it wasn't personal.
Well, and they know that already, because that's the practice, you know. We all know what you went through. We've all been through it. You know, we all have those kind of really hard memories that we don't want to go back to, of just really crappy things that we've done. You know, but it's all, you know, in the world, you know, outside of practice, that's nothing but a bad thing. You know, that's nothing but a bad memory to just try to never think about again.
Yeah.
But and this is, you know, I said this earlier, but in a way, it's, you know, it's the same that. It can be the thing that we can feel grateful for, you know, because it just requires that. I don't know why it's set up that way, but it just requires every once in a while for us to run into something so that we can see, you know, where we are. And, you know, if we take that personally ourselves, then, you know, we're not going to get a whole lot out of it.
Yeah.
But if we recognize that what's happening is, you know, life is putting something in our way for us to run into so that we can wake up, then, you know, really our best response, you know, once we kind of get over the shock of it is, you know, thank you. It's like that old commercial. What was that? You know, slap, slap. Thanks. I needed that.
Yeah. And I'm realizing that, because the sense of humility in many ways that comes with it is just helping me to take a better measure of where it is that I may be. I think again, it's a self-discipline that I think in taking on practice to commit myself to the words and thoughts and ideas that are part of this practice, and to learn that I can accept what it is that I had done, but it's learn from it and move from it.
And I hope what you'll find as you go through is that, you know, that humility opens up a door to the compassion that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And because if you're able to, you know, there's a, in the kind of the language of the practice, we might say there's a part of you who's suffering over what happened.
There's a part of me that's suffering over what happened, and it's taken a toll on me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's taken a toll on him. You know, he's getting beat up by self-hatred. Imagine what a victory it would be if you were able to embrace him in compassion and help him to understand that it wasn't his fault, that he didn't do anything wrong, that it was just, you know, it was just conditioning, that it wasn't him who did all that. It would take the game that conditioning was playing you and turn it inside out and turn it into a really big victory.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And I think what's going to help me to get there is a regular routine, a regular practice that's a part of my day, a part of my and I revolve around it in many ways.
Yeah, for sure. I agree completely. And just like Chris was talking about, you know, truly taking advantage of every form of support you can get your hands on. You know, you might download archives from the radio show. You might read the books. Mm-hmm. You might, sitting every day is probably the best thing that you can do, like you're saying. Anything you can do to help remind you of what you really want for yourself. You know, you don't want to live in a world of suffering. It doesn't sound like, you know, you want to practice, and you want to experience what the possibilities that practice brings into a person's life.
Yeah, and I was angry with myself the other day, and my daughter and wife were sitting there, and my daughter, who's 4, said to my wife, that's not how Daddy acts. Why is he angry like that?
Yeah.
And it was another small wake-up, because she takes so much from what I do and how we play and everything, and that's not a part of me that I want her to ever feel.
Yeah, another wake-up call. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another wake-up call. So I also would love if any way there is a message that can be sent to Alex, one of the monks there. Please tell him that I think and thought of what it is he said to me quite a lot, and regret what it is that I had said to him.
Okay, I'm sure he'll take that in stride.
Yeah. Well, and it's good to hear your voice, Dave. I didn't expect for you to be on the line. I did expect you to be in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Well, take good care of yourself, Joe, and enjoy having your eyes open, you know. And thanks a lot for calling in, you know, because that takes a lot of guts to call in and talk about what you talked about. So I hope you'll give yourself a big pat on the back for your willingness for that.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Joe. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Tonight we have Dave McKay with us. Dave's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, I was projecting a lot of courage onto that as well.
Yeah, and it's true. It happens to all of us.
Yes.
I wish there was some way that it could have been avoided, but it truly, as far as I can tell, it just can't. You know, practice is, you know, crashing and burning pretty much the whole time, as far as I can tell.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. Dave, we're going to take a quick break here, and I'll be right back with you.
Okay, great.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have, looks like, three more callers here.
Super.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm calling from Kansas City.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Good, how are you? Hi, David. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I have one of the listeners that I haven't called in before, so first time I kind of committed to calling today.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And I haven't been to the monastery yet, but I have a really good friend who is there now and kind of influences me to keep going with awareness practice. I'm actually having a really good day, and it's kind of funny because I don't feel super identified with anything at the moment, but there was things that I definitely wanted to talk about. Right now, I have really nice opportunities with a job that I'm in right now, and I'll tell you what's going on, and maybe you can give me some insight as to maybe what conditioning has going on for me.
Okay, well, we'll give it a shot anyway.
All right. So basically, I'm really happy with the current job situation that I'm in now, and yet the company that I'm with has given a lot of opportunities to try something else that is also really of interest to me, and I'm caught in this kind of like, do I take this new opportunity and possibly give up, you know, the situation that I'm in, and so I'm kind of left hanging as far as I have the voices saying, you know, well, this is a place that you've always wanted to go. You know, you have to relocate possibly or travel more, and then I start listening to that, and then I listen to the other side, and kind of get to a point where it's like, oh, I don't know, and I don't know what voices are telling me what or what to kind of believe, so to speak, I kind of, you know, and I can see where it shows up in other areas, you know, not just with work. But I guess where it leads is to a place of kind of like, oh, I don't care, or, oh, I don't, you know, I can't tell what's going on, which way would be right. So that's kind of what, I don't know if you've had that experience before or not. Or,
oh, yeah. Yeah, big time. I bet you your friend, whoever that is, that retreat is saying, I know the answer. Because they've been talking about that in the retreat. You know, the way we describe what you talked about is duality.
Uh-huh.
And there's one side of duality, you know, says one thing, the other side of the duality says the other thing, and
right.
We feel like there's somehow there's some right choice between the two.
Right, and it's like I guess where I go is like, okay, I see the one side is a story and the other side's a story, and they're both stories, and now what?
Uh-huh. Well, that's really significant in itself. I mean, it's really good to understand that, because, you know, I bet you at one point you didn't understand that. It wasn't
right.
One story, another story. It was one reality or another reality.
Right. Yeah, that is very true. And so now I guess, yeah, the space I'm in now is sort of like, okay, so what do I believe or what do I do? And, you know, I've seen it before, and then I know that I go with something that feels right. And I heard, you know, Sherry said before, you know, am I going to go with this car or am I going to go with that car? And I'm going to choose the one that saves gas or whatever. And even though it, you know, and so I get that. I mean, I can see that yet I still find myself coming back to feeling this way.
Yeah, I bet. Well, you know, this is duality is kind of the building block that the whole thing that we call conditioned mind is set on, you know, so it has a lot of power to tangle us up, because, you know, that's just what it's designed to do.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, one thing, you know, in what you were talking about, you know, you could choose the one car or the other car.
Right.
Now, the result of that, of course, is going to depend upon your relationship with yourself.
Uh-huh.
Right? If you're in a kind of a self-hating, you know, you got to make the right decision, sort of life and death kind of relationship with yourself, which is what usually happens in conditioning, then
right.
no matter what car you pick, it's going to be the wrong car and you're going to feel bad.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, because, yeah, there's all the, you know, kind of the way conditioning would play it out would be, you know, all the, it would fill in all the details and it would say, oh, look at all these other things that, you know, you would have to adjust or that you might lose if you, you know, or that might get thrown out of whack if you do this or,
yeah.
you know, look at, yeah. And so that's where it kind of catches me with, oh, you know, like being caught in the middle and then not, you know, kind of in a state of paralysis on, oh, I don't know what to think. And then eventually going to, I don't care, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, exactly, which is the place that it's trying to drive you to. You know, because then, you know, I don't care. I mean, basically what that says is I'm, you know, you've given up having
mm-hmm.
the life that you want.
Interesting,
you know,
cause
it's,
yeah.
It's not really about the car, is it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, no. And that's kind of why the job thing is just the content. I mean, and I get that, you know, like, because I can't think of it right now, but I know I've kind of been aware of it being in other places. So, yeah, so I kind of, you're right. And I guess that in a sense that, it's not about the car, you know.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've got a story on one side and a story on the other, which you've recognized, and then
right.
we've got this relationship that's happening in the middle of it, the relationship between you and whoever it is that's going along with you in your life.
Uh-huh.
You know, so if self-hate, like we were talking about a minute ago, if self-hate is the thing that's going along with you in your life, then no matter what happens, you're going to end up feeling bad about yourself because self-hate's holding all the cards. You know,
right.
holding all the standards, you know, you pick the purple one, you should have had the blue one. You know, you pick the blue one, you should have had the purple one. It's got all the strings.
Right.
If the person you're going through your life with loves you,
mm-hmm.
and cares about you, and wants you to and feel good about yourself, and also feels good about you,
mm-hmm.
then no matter what car you choose, it's going to be the right car.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say the person going along with you, do you mean... You mean me, or do you mean us, like a significant other, or is that
not an outside person?
Not an outside. You mean myself?
Yeah. Well, this is one of those things that's just about impossible to talk about. But you know, so normally what happens, and this is what you're describing. There's the duality. You know, there, on
right.
the two side. There's the blue car or the purple car. If there is
right.
a purple car, I'm not sure, but it's the blue car or the purple car, and then you and I, you kind of put that in quotes. You know, whoever
right.
you are. Is in the middle, kind of between that, trying to decide on which one to get.
Right.
And yet you're not alone there, because mm. along with you there, and this is, you know, this is in the conditioned system, along with you there is self-hatred. Now, self-hatred
uh-huh.
is just right behind you whispering, saying, hey, buddy, you got to make the right choice. You know,
yeah, that is true.
Because for conditioning, it's not about the car either. It's about
right.
making sure that you always feel bad about yourself, that you're always insufficient or inadequate in some way, you know, something.
Yeah, I get, you're right in the sense that when you said, like, the voice of self-hate is right there behind me, kind of, I, and I didn't think of it before, but saying, hey, I guess there's something going on telling me that I should be making the right choice.
Definitely, yeah, and it's a
yeah.
total setup because, like we were saying before, conditioning has all the standards. So
mm-hmm.
it's impossible to make the right choice. No matter which choice you make, conditioning is going to say that was the wrong choice. Doesn't matter
mm-hmm.
if you pick the blue one or the purple one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
So what next?
Well, there's this other relationship. And this is, you know, the retreat that's happening right now is that there's nothing wrong with your retreat. And this is what the retreat is all about, kind of what you and I are talking about.
Uh-huh.
So what is possible for us with a lot of willingness and a lot of practice is to be in the middle of all that without the outside changing. You know, you still got to choose between the purple car and the blue car.
Right.
Without any of that changing, instead of our primary relationship in life being with self-hatred,
uh-huh.
it's possible with practice to make it so that our primary relationship with life is with, and then there's a lot of words for it, love, kindness, compassion, God,
mm-hmm.
life. You know, that's the word we use most around here probably, life. You know, this thing that you can't talk about that is kind of stands in the same place as self-hatred, just at least this is how it is for me, just kind of right behind me saying,
uh-huh.
you know, hey, I love you no matter what. It doesn't matter to me which car you pick. You know, it's going to be fine. You know, there is no such thing as a right choice. Here, why don't you just have whichever one you feel like you want right now?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then let it be. sort of thing instead of go into the analysis paralysis sort of.
Yeah, for
style.
Sure. Yeah, because, you know, all of conditioning is designed to keep from happening what we're talking about, to get to end that relationship, to get between you and life. You know, at least in my experience, and I, you know, a lot of people would back me up probably, you know, life, you can't really talk about life wanting something, but if you could, you could say, you know, life wants us to be happy. Life wants us to be alive and free. You know, life wants us to be full of joy and really experience everything. You know, and so it's like, and life is there all the time. It's talking to us all the, in a way, all the time.
Right.
It's offering those kinds of things to us.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning lives off of our separation from that life, you might say. That's what all that conversation is about. You know, you talk about getting pulled into the nitty-gritty of it. That's what that's all about. If it can get you into a debate about which is the right choice, then it has pulled you out of life into it. And it's it's sort of feeding off all of your life force, and it's causing you to suffer.
I guess too, like, because in a sense that I've been in a, been through that dialogue before, and I've seen it, and I've moved forward, and watched that go on. And yet, what kind of the maybe the area that I'm getting into with myself now is sort of like, yet I still it still comes back, and if, I guess part of me is like, you know, the, on a simpler sense, which is sounds silly, is well, you know, when is it just going to stop already? Or, you know, that you know, even though I'm aware of it, it still catches me and brings me back, and then I, you know, get caught.
And it will for a really long time.
As in forever? Or
well, the good news in it is, and this goes right back to our last caller, is it's not, whenever it's doing that, it's an opportunity to end suffering. You know, whenever that debate is there, what you can know is that guy who's living in the middle of that debate and suffering is there also.
Right.
Because those two things arise together. And so every time that that conditioning there and the self-hate is there trying to pull you into some story that you can feel bad about,
right,
there's an opening for compassion. You know, there's an opening for what you're looking for.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, all of life is, that's not the right way to say it, just about every moment of life is providing us that kind of opportunity in one way or another, because we're faced with choices all the time. You know, we're faced with, like the previous caller was talking about, you know, faced with difficult things that happen, you know, things that we regret, or, you know, or even outside things that are difficult, you know, breakups, you know, you get laid off, you know, all the kinds of things that people really struggle with.
Right.
All of those things are going to, conditioning is going to try to use all those things to assert itself and become and remain a dominant force in your life. And at the same time, exactly in that same place is the opportunity to allow life to take care of us instead. And that's what we're practicing. We're practicing being aware of how conditioning does what it does, which is exactly what you're talking about, and then allowing life to show us how we can live in another way.
So maybe when I hear that going on, like I can see it going on, I'm aware of it. Would you say that it's a good idea to just say, oh, I'm not going to listen to that sort of thing and just be like, I try to ignore it? Because I mean, sometimes that only makes it, you know, exist even stronger, right?
Yeah, it does. Well, this is your work. You know, this is the thing, this is your project, is to, is to see how can you be in the middle of all that and not be in relationship with conditioning?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, any sort of relationship is going to be with conditioning is going to be a relationship with suffering. Now, there are little tricks and tools that the practice offers. The best and the simplest one is just coming back to the breath. You know, so you notice, once you see that you're caught in that story, you no longer need to have any relationship with it at all. You know, the only reason we kind of pay any attention to that sort of thing is just to get to the point where we see, oops, I'm caught in a story.
Right.
So you reckon, here's the debate. Drop
then,
it, both sides.
Uh-huh.
And then just come back to the breath.
And just, and just be aware of the breath and then, and just focus on that.
Yeah, exactly. Because as you come back, you know, come back to the breath, you have a shot at getting present. And of course, when you're present, that's where the magic happens. You know, that's where the information is, you could even say. You know, you're looking for, you've seen how it works. You see what it's doing to you. you don't get to see kind of how to practice the alternative.
Yeah.
But that's the place where it will show itself to you. You know, as you come back to the moment, then there will be the information that you need about how things can be different inside of you in relationship to this thing.
I notice sometimes when I do that, sometimes it works real good, and I'll get right back into right here, right now, and be doing whatever it is. And another part comes in is like, that's a great way to, you know, the voice is like, that's a great way to avoid what's going on. You know, come back, talk with me. You know, like that. You know,
go ahead,
take a breath, and you know, get back to driving the car or whatever it is that you're doing, and oh, you're just ignoring it now. You know, that's kind of.
Yep, so there's another story, right? So drop that, come back to the breath, you know, and then it'll say the next thing to try to pull you out. Drop that, come back to the breath. You know, that's the practice. You know, that's the skill that we're trying to learn in meditation. You know, if we can learn to direct our attention in that way and pull our attention out of conditioning just to the moment, you know, that's where, like I said, that's where all the magic happens. You know, that's where the possibility is that we can't really talk about, but that we can practice.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a great thing for me to do over the next few weeks and call back and
for
talk
sure.
About my experience,
it'd be fun to it'd be fun to hear how it goes. Heck, it's a heck of a project.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, it sounds simple, but it's not. You know, it can be very challenging. I know. So
yeah, and you might want to consider coming. You know, following in the footsteps of your friend and coming in to do a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Oh, it will. It will happen.
Okay,
it's just a matter of when, not if.
Just a matter of time, yeah.
Because
that's exactly, you know, the whole week is focused on exactly what we're talking about.
Uh-huh, and listening to all those voices trying to get you out of doing that, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the workshop starts way ahead of the workshop.
Well, yeah, I definitely will go, so.
Okay, good.
Well, it was, thank you for your time. It was really helpful.
Yeah, and yours also. Thanks for calling in.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Peter. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have Dave McKay, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All righty.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful, simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my life, what a life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
I sure do love it. I sure.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have two more callers here. Next caller, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi, Dave. I heard a caller mention earlier, I had this whole conversation worked out with Sherry.
Well, maybe we could have it. Who knows?
Well, it was kind of based on recent guidance. Yes, you're right. And I've also been noticing that as I've been sitting here listening that this growing nausea has been coming up, like on a physical level, which I've been fine all day, like very active, no problem all day. But just sitting here, there's just like this sense of, ugh.
Yeah, getting ready to talk on the radio show and just this, here comes the sickening dread.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the a clearing point for me recently in talking to Sherry was kind of recognizing I've been really angry at people for abandoning me, and kind of recognizing that the main abandonment has been by me.
Well, yeah, has been done by the conditioning that makes that kind of the reality for most people.
Yes,
I say it that way just. I say it that way just to take the possible self-hatred out of it, because,
well,
you know, it's not our fault. Yeah, it's not our fault that that happens. It's just how we're trained to live in the world. That's it.
Right, and it worked for a long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I survived childhood, but I didn't.
Yep.
But it no longer serves me. And in fact, it's actually hurting me.
Yeah. Well, it does stop working pretty dramatically, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And a couple of situations that kind of, I mean, like on a karmic level, not something I intentionally put into play, have been coming into fruition.
Okay.
So things that kind of like I put into play like in January. So even if I have come to a place of spiritual clearing, doesn't mean that I'm exempt from karma.
Oh, I see. Well, if I understand what you're saying, you know, coming to, at least in my experience, coming to a place of spiritual clearing, and I'm not sure if I understand exactly what you mean by that, but in my experience of it, that's what brings in all the karma.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, that's just, you know, normally we're going along in life, you know, pretending like none of the stuff is happening. You know, we try to wake up, we try to get to a place where we're present, we're clear, and all the stuff that's been hiding behind the bushes all that time jumps out, you know, and says, hey, you got to deal with me now.
Yes. And it's all the stuff that I've spent my whole life avoiding.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and kind of finding that, you know, it's like, okay, so I'm seeing that this is my karma kind of coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of seeing, you know, my responsibility for it without, like, it being my fault.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and to me, that's the good thing about karma, in a way. It doesn't go away. You know, it's really persistent. It's kind of mathematical, too, in a way. You know, it will do what it's designed to do until the end of time.
Hmm.
You know? And so we really only have two choices, either run away from it forever, which is the choice a lot of people make, and there's no problem with that, it's just the choice people make, or to try to stand up to it and move beyond it and sort of use, and like we've been saying all evening, you know, use it as sort of as a springboard or as a, even like, you know how in, like in, I don't know anything about this, but they say like in judo, you know, you use the kind of the momentum of your opponent to throw your opponent, kind of like that. You know, using the momentum that karma, the persistence and the
dedication. Right, like when you're going uphill, it's harder to go from stop than it is to just to keep going. It takes more energy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, using that determination that karma seems to have to assert itself over and over and over again as to our own advantage to wake up and end suffering.
Well, one of the things that, kind of going into the story a little bit, one of the things that I have avoided my entire life, and I'd say that it has really been like a guiding force in my life, is to keep people from being angry at me.
Uh-huh.
And in the last 3 weeks, I have been yelled at by 5 different people.
Uh-huh.
Some person got so angry at me that they egged my car this morning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, time to work on that issue, huh?
And, you know, it's just like the waves that it sends off of how not okay this is.
Yeah.
That
well,
somebody's angry,
you know,
at me.
Yeah, it's easy to see, too. It, you know, or at least it's easy to project that life has a sense of humor, you know, when stuff like that happens. Because, you know, what are the chances of that, really? You know, that it all could happen right now. But it makes sense. You know, it's for whatever reason, whatever combination of reasons, it's time to deal with this, evidently.
Well, it's coming from independent sources. I mean, it's not like, it's just that it's coming from different places. But
that's,
it's kind of like, you know, the question that I really wanted to ask Sherry is I've seen that a lot of my karma is not taking care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like this flakiness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, in a way that I've, in my conditioning, that's how I think I'm taking care of myself.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not.
No. Yeah.
And that I'm willing to take care of myself, I don't really, I mean, it's, we'll see now, as soon as I, even as I'm starting to say it, I can see it's not true. Because
uh-huh.
This morning after, you know, my car was van, I came back in, and, you know, I just sat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, the situation didn't change, but then there was a lightness to it.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that's what you're calling more true taking care of yourself.
Yeah, even though at the time that wasn't like my intent.
Yeah,
it was
just
kind of like recognizing that, you know, where I'm at, nothing good is going to come of this.
Yeah, well, for all of us in our conditioning, you know, taking care of ourselves in gigantic quotes is some form of self-sabotage. You know, because we use, this kind of ties back to what we've talked about already this evening. You know, we use self-hatred in a way to protect ourselves. You know,
yes,
if we can always stay in the place where we're kind of getting beaten up, then we never have to worry about sort of getting it, being surprised by something.
Right. And a trap, you know, for me is thinking that I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've reached this place of clearing, so I'm done. And then
right.
I'm surprised.
And then, yeah, and then, of course, you know, everybody on the block, you know, gets out their eggs and, you know, to prove to you that that's not true.
Yes, yes. The thing that was kind of coming up for me when you were speaking, and it came up earlier in the other callers, was on the monastery wall, there's the thing about, you know, it's like you'll find a true friend that'll help you risk yourself.
Uh-huh.
To find that place that's unbreakable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have this feeling that, you know, if somebody yells at me, I'm just going to break.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of finding, you know, that may be true, but there's that place underneath that's, you know, not soft, not tender. That's,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if I understand what you're saying, you know, in a way, that's what we're all hoping for in kind of the deepest places of who we are, you know, that we will break, you know, that life will be kind enough to hit us with something big enough and hard enough that this way that we've learned to defend ourselves from life will fall apart and we'll get a sense of who we actually are. You know, that's why people come to monasteries, you know, because it just happens a lot here. You know, you just keep on running into stuff because it's just set up that anytime you kind of swerve away from center, you run into something. And,
right.
You know, for someone who's interested in surviving this life without ever getting rattled, you know, without ever feeling any hard feelings or, you know, having to struggle with anything, then that's not going to be a good time. But for someone who is interested in pursuing this life as a way of finding that, boy, there's just so many ways to talk about it that don't really say it, but, you know, that stillness inside or that peace or, you know, that place that's beyond all the opposites we were talking about in the previous call, then all of those kinds of things that we run into, you know, we start to look for those. We start to be grateful for them because those are things that wake us up.
Yes. Yes. And I can hear it in my, like, there's this tension in my voice right now that I wasn't really aware of until talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'm really coming from a place of center.
Well,
in this conversation, but I think that person who's wondering that is probably not helpful.
Yeah, who cares, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That can just become another standard that we get beat up over. Yeah. Something you might consider is that, you know, when it seems like, you know, life starts conspiring in ways like it is, you know, all these people yelling at you and people throwing eggs at you and stuff like that. You know, what this is, I'm kind of making this up, but this is how it seems to me anyway, you know, that comes from a sort of willingness. You know, when we say no to the possibility of waking up, in this odd way, things tend to kind of cooperate, you know, either that or we just don't notice when all these things are happening to us.
Yeah.
But then the moment we say, okay, it's kind of like I had this experience a while back where I really got this where, you know, we have all these really ancient vehicles here at the monastery, as you know. And,
very,
you know, they're all kind of doing what they're doing. And they were doing fine. And then one day I said, you know, I'd really like to learn how to mechanic. I think I'm going to take on the maintenance of all these cars. And they immediately all broke down. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know, when we say, hey, you know, I'm willing to end suffering, then life says, okay, here you go. Here's something to work on.
Yes. Yes. Ha. Yeah, I remember once you telling me that it's kind of like you're always up to your eyeballs in conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
it's like I think I've gone deep, and then there's this other level.
Yeah, there's always another level.
There's always another level.
Well,
yeah.
Actually, I don't know if that's true. We'll have to see how that goes. But so far, there's always been another level.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's kind of like the part that I'm struggling with is accepting my own humanity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice way to say it, actually, you know, to find out, to get in touch with our humanness. You know, that word humility that was used before, I think that's what that's it.
Yeah.
You know, just to get it that, you know, gosh, there's this tender being in the middle of all this experience, and it would be so great if that person could really be allowed to live.
Yeah, and there are moments when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, there are practices that I've set up in my life that kind of encourage that in my work, in my sitting, in my garden.
Yep. That's why we do all those structures that we were talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what keeps us going.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for calling, Beth. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, take care.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the pleasure and privilege of having Dave McKay, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we have about 9 minutes left, and we have one more caller.
Right, perfect.
I'd like to welcome our next caller. You are live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rob from Minnesota.
Hey, Rob.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
And I'm a little bit nervous, as everybody seems to be. It's comforting to hear other people talk about that.
Yeah.
And I'm calling just about a year from the last time I called.
Okay.
Because during the school year, I teach on Tuesday nights, and so this is one of the first times I've had to answer Sherry's call to call back. She gave me an assignment, and it has been one heck of a year of insight and exploration of it. And so I just thought I would call and give my little report, and then I have a question for you, Dave.
Okay, great. Well, that's fantastic. It's fun to think about you doing that project kind of off there on your own all year.
Yeah, it's really it's been an amazing year. Lots of new awareness, and I want to just also thank the you and everybody who makes this show possible, and all the other outreach activities. Because for people like me, they're just extremely valuable. You folks are a big part of my life.
Sure.
So
well, you're quite welcome, and it the feeling is mutual. All that kind of stuff supports us, too. It goes two ways.
It's really amazing. I my little iPod is my little teaching machine, and I listen all the time and really love it.
Huh,
and when I called a year ago, I was talking about sort of fatigue at work and getting and a feeling of kind of burnout. And the assignment that Sherry set me was to look for where that energy went to during the week. And she said, who is siphoning off that energy?
Uh-huh.
And that started me looking at things in a new way. And the first kind of big earth-shattering revelation was to realize that work time was not a problem in my life, but free time was hell.
Who would have thought?
The problem really was free time. And even just today in my notebook, finding another way to kind of zero in on that feeling, I wrote, you know, on a work day, I have four or five things to do. On a free day, I have 1,000 things to do.
Yeah.
And if I could only decide what the right thing was, then I would feel better.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of what conditioning says. And I think what I realized is that my conditioning was to be a kind of a servant and a supporter of and sort of constant companion of a narcissistic parent. And so I became very good at kind of tuning into other people's needs and feeling secure when those other people were content, and then feeling worried when they weren't. And
yeah. It's too bad we can't ask our audience for a show of hands on how many other people have had that experience. Because boy, you're talking the name of the game here.
There it is. Yep. And so the kind of what I among the kind of strategies that I've taken to deal with is as I see, really watch the process and watch how I suffer during those free moments, or I've zeroed in kind of on these transitions between activities or points at which I can lose center, conditioning will take hold. Mm-hmm. And so starting during the second of the email classes this last year, I started when I can to do a 5-minute meditation at those transition moments.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And say, try to center. And so that was one of my questions, because I just wanted to check and see if that was kind of okay, rather than having a longer sit during the day, but to have several in between transition sits.
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be an either or, perhaps. It really is good to, and this is not a should at all, but it really is good to sit, you know, to have a place and a time, you know, a practice of sitting meditation. And boy, that's just a fantastic practice, it seems like, to bring awareness to the places where conditioning is kind of sliding itself in and stopping there and practicing awareness. Well, you know, that just seems great.
So it's good to, it's really fun to talk about this with you. Not many people I can talk about these things with here.
You seem a little odd, probably.
Yes. As just one indication of how I really have seen in general my kind of baseline of happiness rise. Just something happened that I wanted to report after this year's work. Just the other day, in a conversation with someone that was beginning to turn into a kind of a typical argument, and the person was starting to kind of, you know, name call a little bit or characterize me, and I was able for the first time ever, and I couldn't even believe that I could do this, I kind of stepped back right there in the conversation. And instead of getting defensive about the accusation, I said, I really like who I am.
Uh-huh.
And it just, the whole argument just kind of ground to a halt, and this person's eyes got really big. And I realized, you know, it doesn't matter what they, it's like when I say that, that's kind of the end of it, because I don't, and that's the result of this work. I really see it.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? It sounds like one of those where, gosh, how in the heck did I do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
it's fun to talk about it too in terms of energy, because I think you started off talking about energy.
Yes.
You know, because every place where conditioning comes in is a place that conditioning is trying to siphon off your energy. You know, so you're cruising along with however much energy you have, which is a lot. You know, we all have just tons of energy when we're not tangled up in conditioned mind. But then conditioning has all these ways of sort of tapping in. It's like I saw a picture one time of this power line in India where, you know, people had kind of pirated it. You know, they did like home style tap-ins to pick up the electricity, and there were like hundreds of these wires coming off of the main wire. You know, it's kind of like that. You know, conditioning has all these ways of pulling our attention away, our energy away. And every place where we can kind of pull that wire out, you know, and dissolve that connection, kind of like you're doing, well, in both those instances that you said, you know, stopping at the transitions because you recognize that's one of those places where your energy goes, or, you know, in that argument, you know, because there's a lot, that was a big energy suck potential, I bet you. You know, if you had gone into...
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, that would have been days of, you know, eating myself up over it and stewing about it. Yep.
Yep, for sure. So every one of those places where you make that different choice, like you did in the argument and like you're practicing doing in the transition, is a place where instead of that energy sort of, you know, draining off into the conditioned machine, it becomes yours. You know, it becomes yours to sort of fuel the life that you have.
Yep. That's a really good description of it. Because I just do feel more, you know, more and more that that's the case. Mm-hmm. I don't know where we are time-wise, if I have time for a question or if...
Yeah. No, we're really close.
Okay. Well, the question is this. I am looking at the kind of the new big project with the one thing and thinking about setting as my one thing I want to do every day is to contact someone, a friend, a relative, something, some kind of contact. But as I looked at that, I'm going, well, I could see how easily, because loneliness is sort of is something that you know, I could benefit, I think, from being more in contact with people. But I look at that and I go, this is conditioning.
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
Saying, you know, your job is to make these people happy, they're mad at you, you know, appease them and so on. And so how, but it still seems like a good idea. How would you suggest that I can distinguish between what's a conditioning-based motive and what's a more healthy motive?
Well, we only have a couple minutes or less. So here's a suggestion anyway for you to try, that rather than having it be involved with some outside person to begin with, have it be
mm-hmm.
involved with you.
Find
some way each day to connect with you. You know, take a walk with yourself, have a nice cup of tea with yourself, cook yourself a nice meal. You know, because that's where the action actually is. You know, and then if you feel like broadening that out and trying to include other people later, great. But you might start at the place where, you know, kind of where the energy is, instead of sort of risking kind of all of the ways that that conditioning can suck your energy in outside relationships.
That's great. That's
just,
great.
Just
that feels
not as it should, but just as an idea.
Yeah, no, that feels really right. It's one of those things of like, my reaction is, you mean I really get to do that?
Uh huh.
I didn't even dare to dream that I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay, well,
thanks
for calling in tonight.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you both.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Rob. Dave, we're at the end of our hour.
All right. Well, that was fun.
That was fun. Let's do it again.
Okay. No problem.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay. Take care, Michael.
You too. Good night. Bye-bye.